Yes. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the October 13th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. Appreciate your involvement this afternoon. We have a single item on the council calendar. I'll get Carla to read that for us, make a couple of opening comments, and we'll get started.
Item 1152, amend the official city zoning map, planning and zoning code, and transportation system plan to carry out Portland's 2035 comprehensive plan, establish a new community involvement program and committee, amend related codes, the 2035 comprehensive plan, and plan map to coordinate policies and programs.
Thank you. Well, thanks, everyone, for being here. Appreciate your involvement in the comprehensive plan process. Today, we're here to take more public testimony, and we're relying on that to tune this plan and make it as helpful as possible for the future of our city. Before we start, I want to go over some logistics to make sure this process goes smoothly. You can also testify in writing or by email or online with the Bureau of Planning Sustainability's MAP app, and we recommend that you do that in addition to or to complete testimony that you might make here today. Want to acknowledge that, again, we continue to receive written testimony and in various electronic and paper forms, and that's very helpful to all of us because we're taking in a lot of information, so written material is quite helpful. To maximize the number of people that are going to be able to speak this afternoon, I'd like to limit oral testimony to 2 minutes each. And again, that gives you a chance to summarize your points. And if you can't get it all in, you can follow up by email or in writing. And we do actually read these materials. If you're testifying about a specific property, please, if you can, don't forget to tell us the address, just so we can note that in our own notes that we're taking as we go along. The content of your testimony is more important than the number of people who say it. So if you're here with a cause or with a concern in the community that has a lot of others in it, it's particularly helpful if somebody summarizes that and people indicate that they're on board rather than that we hear the same thing 20 times. We're going to try to hear as many people as possible today. And I know we have about 30 people who signed up last week because we had a hearing then, and we're going to take them first. I don't believe we need to take any staff presentations before we start, right? We did that the last time. We have a work session scheduled for October 25th to discuss testimony and identify potential amendments that one or more members of the council are interested in. And then there's a hearing tentatively scheduled for November 17th. To allow you to comment on the amendments that we do propose, and obviously keep an eye on our city calendar through the council calendar to make sure that that's the date we stick with, but that's the date we have in mind, November 17th. So with that, unless there's anything else I've neglected to include, we'll go back to the testimony list, which was not completed last time, and start where we left off.
I show 12 people have come back. The first three are Theron Park, Michael Robinson, and Richard Uren.
Welcome. Good
and
afternoon.
And they'll be followed by Mike Connors, Bob Schatz, and Tim Ramis.
Great. All right. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and City Commissioners. I'm Theron Park, Chief Exec of the Delivery System for the Oregon Region, which includes 8 hospitals and our outpatient services. This testimony is specific to Providence Portland Medical Center. We have been successful in reducing our single occupancy vehicle rate from 88% to 68% over the last couple of years, and we remain committed to that work. However, our future is dependent on flexibility within the TDM strategies and what is effective for our campus. Operationally, that includes how we partner with public transportation, our neighborhood associations with the city on how we implement the TDM. If the city adopts a TDM strategy that requires pay-to-park program, that could have a negative effect on our operations, on our partnerships that we currently have, and most importantly, on our caregivers. A requirement to pay-to-park could affect and will affect our lowest wage caregivers that we have at Providence Portland Medical Center. and would affect them the most. What we would respectfully request of the City Council is to not adopt the TIR and TDM regulations. A complete package, including the administrative rules, should be made available on the TDM regulations for hospitals, and we would like the opportunity to review that for public review and comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Could you just tell me where is that regulation to about Pater Park? Whereabouts is it found?
You want me to answer?
Turn out the mic. Yeah.
Michael can probably.
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
I'll do that. Good afternoon, Mayor Hills, members of council. My name is Mike Robinson. I'm here on behalf of Providence. And can I step back to my chair and I can tell you exactly where that regulation is?
Sure. Do you mind? Sure, please. Right. That'd be helpful.
You can let the time run.
No, that's all right. We won't do that to you.
Sorry, no, Bobby. Thank you. You don't get charged for it when I interrupted and asked a question.
Figure if you cut lawyers short, you might be happy about that. So, let me make sure I've got the right regulation. So, Counselor, in 33266410.A, this is under the Transportation Parking Demand Management section. This is Section A purpose. It describes the methods by which TDM will reduce single occupancy vehicle travel, and one of them is pricing. And we understand by working with our friends at PBOT that pricing includes charging employees for parking. We also have a handout that was given to us by PBOT in July that shows a point system, which we thought was a very encouraging way to address this, sort of an objective system whereby we could try and use various strategies to reduce SOVs beyond the reduction we've already made. And under one of the strategies is pricing, charging employees for parking. This version doesn't have a percentage figure, but when we met with PBOT the first time, the percentage figure, the points that you would get for pricing was 40%. So almost half of the points you'd be awarded for successful TDM strategy was pricing. And that is, in turn, charging employees for parking. That's where you find this information. And let me do my testimony. It's only going to take about 30 seconds, and I'll make a final point that might be helpful to you. So my name is Mike Robinson. I'm here with Mr. Park on behalf of Providence Health and Services Oregon. We have two letters we've submitted to council, one by myself and one by Ms. Farnham, who runs Portland Providence Medical Center, and Mr. Park. And our primary concern is the lack of the administrative rules. That's really how the council is going to understand how TDM will be achieved. And what we have asked of PBOT, and we still think this is a reasonable request, is before we have the land use regulations in place, not only in Title 33, but then the regulations in Title 17, let's see what the administrative rules look like. It may be that we're able to resolve our concerns by a good set of administrative rules, but as Mr. Park said, our primary concern is we're adopting the regulations to set this process in motion, but we haven't done the rules yet. We don't even know what they're going to look like. So our primary request, and we've made this in the letters, is let's get the package, if we could, the complete package, before we adopt the land use regulations that set this in motion.
Thank you.
That's all I have for today.
And obviously, having been a nurse myself, I know that transit doesn't run from the hospital where I used to work to the house that I now live in. So I will be very interested in if you keep me involved going on. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Richard Uran. I live in the Alphabet District of Portland. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of the proposed FAR reduction in the historic Alphabet District. I've also provided written testimony. All of us who own property in this area are aware of the privileges and restrictions of living in a historic district. In the case involved here, two lawyer owners of property in the Alphabet District are unhappy with the obligations that come with owning property in such a district. Their objection centers on the floor area ratio for new buildings, which means they could not build the oversized 160-unit apartment complex they have in mind. They have been trying for several years to build something on the property they own between Hoyt and Irving on 18th Street. Their proposals have been opposed by the neighborhood because the building they want to construct in order to maximize their investment is blatantly out of scale with a surrounding historic neighborhood. They are asking to have their property exempted from the proposed zoning provisions. They have also threatened to sue the city if city council refuses to grant this exemption. But they have not stopped with the threat of a lawsuit. They have cleverly attached their personal agendas to several real and difficult housing issues the city currently faces. They have woven the desire for personal gain into a narrative of affordable housing, gentrification, and not in my backyardism. Because these are high-level housing agenda issues, their efforts have fallen on receptive ears. They have been able to enlist media outlets and two respectable nonprofits to spread misleading information under the umbrella of their chosen narrative.
I want to ask you to wrap up soon, and you can always give us the rest of your written testimony.
Several examples of misleading information are included in my written testimony. Threats and misinformation are not unique in public discourse, but it is our hope that your decision about this issue will be consistent with the provisions you adopted in June and not with the individuals who are asking for what amounts to a spot exemption for their property. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you.
Next, we'll go with Bob Schatz, Tim Ramis, and Brian Carlton. And they'll be followed by Mike Connors, Jim Pliska, and David Schulhammer.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I'll go first. I'm Bob Schatz. I own property at 123 through 311 Southeast 97th Avenue. It's three properties together that add up to 54,000 square feet. I own this property since 2007, and I plan on developing it. The reason why I'm in front of you today is because the Planning Bureau plans on changing the zone from this property from EX to EG1. In doing that, in the EX zone, I am allowed to build apartment buildings and retail space and commercial buildings. In the EG1, I am not allowed to do that. I'm currently building the first of six buildings. By making this change, I won't be able to continue. This is what I do for a living. I own apartments. I rent apartments. I don't know anything about industrial land. I didn't buy this property to be an industrial manager. I urge you to not allow this change to happen. I'm 51 years old. I've been working since I got out of college to get to this point, and plan on spending the next 10 years developing this property to very nice apartments and mixed-use buildings. This is planning to be my retirement. I'm going to hand this down to my kids in time, but if it gets changed to industrial, I just don't know what to do. I'm going to have to probably sell it and start over somewhere else. So I urge you, please, to let it stay the zone that it is.
Okay, that was 123 to 311 Southeast 97th?
Yes.
97th. Okay.
97.
Just want to make sure I heard that right.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Mr. Mayor, for your record, Tim Ramis, thank you for the opportunity to comment on the request to finally conform the zoning on a property in Sylvan to its comprehensive plan designation. The address is two properties, 1434 and 1512 Southwest 58th. I have two short comments I'll make based upon the letter I've submitted. The first is I want the record to be absolutely clear that I wholeheartedly support and join in the commitment made by my neighbor, Michael Foster, that this land will not be developed without creating a sidewalk along Southwest 58th. That sidewalk is a critical connection from Michael's home further up the hill to the amenities and services in Sylvan, and it's been my commitment to him that we would make sure that that happens. You will recall that the concern of the staff has been that, at least in theory, someone might try to develop that land without building a sidewalk. We won't do that. You have our commitment to that. Second, even without our commitment to get the sidewalk built, you have every ability legally to impose the requirement. You've seen photographs of the other projects in the area which have extended the necessary sidewalk network along the street. And I provided with my letter excerpts from the record of two current projects which are in development and in development review, both of which have been conditioned to build sidewalks on 58th. No objection from the developers. Clearly, the city has the ability to require it. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. My name is Brian Carlton, and I apologize, I'm going to read just to stay on task. I'm an architect here in Portland, and I'm here to comment on the planned modifications to longstanding allowable floor area ratios in the Alphabet District. I'm currently working with Northwest Housing Alternatives on a potential affordable housing project in the neighborhood. While I'm working with NHA and care deeply about affordable housing, the reason I'm here is to address the greater impact that downzoning in the Alphabet District can have on this neighborhood, other inner city neighborhoods, and our metro area as a whole. Not only is allowing for higher densities in our inner city neighborhoods a staple of sustainable city development, it is also a key ingredient in our effort to provide housing for our low and middle income citizens. While it is never the right time to restrict access to neighborhoods that offer connections to jobs, public transit, shopping, and services, it is especially short-sighted to do so at a time when our city is struggling to provide housing and so many are in need of such a place to live. As the owner of an architecture firm that has received several awards for our work in historic preservation, I care deeply about the historic fabric of the neighborhood and believe historic resources should be protected. I also believe history should be viewed inclusively, and in the case of the historic Alphabet District, one cannot protect the district without protecting the architectural diversity. The mix of historic buildings ranges from two-story Victorian homes to six-story apartment buildings to various religious, cultural, and commercial buildings. While scandalous when they were first introduced to the neighborhood in 1903, taller apartment buildings added to the richness of life in the neighborhood and opened it to a more economically diverse group of citizens. This is an ideal that we are struggling to realize throughout the city today. I believe preservation and development must not be at odds. Context-appropriate, neighborhood-friendly development at higher densities and scale is possible, and Portland already has guidelines and review mechanisms in place to ensure new development is sensitive to historic resources. And I'll cut off here, but also we did submit written testimony, and within that written testimony, we actually did some analysis on what we consider available land for development when we cut out historic resources and newly developed land and that type of thing, and feel that that there's actually a very limited opportunity to overwhelm the new neighborhood, so to speak, and that the 4-to-1 ratio, FAR ratio on the available land is appropriate for the context of the neighborhood.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Mike Connors, Jim Pliska, and David Scholhammer, and they'll be followed by Ellen Burr, Christy White, and Kathy Birch.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Who would like to go first?
I'll go ahead and go first since I'm next on the list. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Mike Connors. I'm here on behalf of Space Age Fuel and Pliska Investments, LLC, who owns and operates several gas service stations throughout the city. We're here to submit both oral written testimony in opposition to the Planning Commission recommendation that all drive-through facilities east of 80th Avenue be prohibited and all existing facilities be rendered non-conforming uses. What we're asking you to do is to instead adopt the staff recommendation that was developed below before the Planning Commission. I'll explain briefly why. First of all, we understand with the mixed-use zones that there's a desire to make them more pedestrian-friendly, but you have to balance that against the need for some auto-accommodating uses, gas stations being a number one. Cars are going to be around for a long time. We're still going to need gas. And you wrestled with that in the comprehensive plan and adopted policy 4.24, which said that you're prohibiting drive-through facilities, gas stations, a subset of that, in Central City, and then restricting it in the inner ring districts, but no other policy. Staff took that, carried that forward, came up with their own recommendations, and then spent months talking with us and many other stakeholders to come up with the right balance. And they introduced a recommendation that basically allows drive-through facilities in the CE zone only, and then prohibits it in the remaining mixed-use zones, but says existing facilities do have the right to rebuild, upgrade, or remodel. What happened at the Planning Commission level is after the public testimony during the work session, one of the commissioners proposed this new policy. There was no analysis of the policy, what the implications would be. Staff recommended the Planning Commission not adopt it. We strongly encourage you to look at those deliberations because it was clear that some of the commissioners that voted in favor of it weren't really in favor of the policy. They really just wanted to get the issue to have you discuss it. But we think there's several problems with it. First of all, it takes away a need in a very large part of the city for gas stations. It unfairly penalizes those existing businesses who have developed those in their rendering nonconforming uses and would prohibit them from remodeling or upgrading those facilities. We don't think that's a good policy. What we ask you to do is to adopt the staff's recommendation that was developed consistent with your comprehensive plan policies after months of discussions and real thorough analysis. And I appreciate you allowing me to go a little bit over my time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And presumably then car washes are also drive-thrus, are they?
Yeah, drive-thrus are a pretty broad group. I mean, coffee places that you drive up to, it's a pretty broad group.
I understand that coffee, but I hadn't actually thought of the purpose of a garage or a dry wash.
Car wash, right.
Yeah. Which, and car washes are generally more environmentally sensitive than soaking it up in your front yard. Right. Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi, my name is Jim Pliska, managing member of Pliska Investments and owner of Space Age Fuel. And we have four facilities that are affected by the basically of not allowing drive-thrus as a non, or making these a non-conforming use. And we've been in business for over 30 years and had these facilities, and we want to continue to service the areas out there. And I feel it's real unfair for us not be able to upgrade these facilities in the future. There might be other forms of fuel in the future that cars may use, et cetera. And I think it would be very short-sighted not to allow the upgrade or rebuilding of these sites for fueling facilities. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much for coming. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is David Schollhammer, and I chair the Land Use Committee for the Selwood-Moreland Improvement League, better known as SMILE. Our neighborhood has 2.8 miles of commercial corridor that is experiencing phenomenal growth. We seek to improve the quality of the mixed-use buildings and preserve the desirable qualities and charm of our neighborhood. I will address new changes proposed by the PSC. Ellen Burr will discuss our request for a design overlay in the next group, and Rachel Ginocchio from the Selwood-Westmoreland Business Alliance will testify later today. First, SMILE and the Business Alliance support the PSC changes regarding low-rise commercial storefront areas, specifically CM1 zoning on Southeast 13th Avenue, south of Tacoma Street. Second, the PSC proposes to increase the building height bonus from 3 to 5 feet for a tall commercial ground floor. We oppose this increase for buildings abutting residential property. Tall mixed-use buildings can dwarf residences and deny solar access and privacy. The PSC proposal favors commercial property values over the quality of life and property value of abutting residences. Third, the mixed-use zones project includes a height step-down for buildings within 25 feet of some abutting residential properties. The PSC proposes to apply the tall ground floor bonus to the step-down height. We oppose this increase of the step-down height. It would further sacrifice residential quality of life and home equity to improve interior aesthetics of commercial space. In summary, we support the tall ceiling bonus presented in the proposed draft report from the mixed-use zones project that was presented in May and oppose PSC changes in the recommended draft you are now considering. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
Next three are Ellen Burr, Christy White, and Kathy Birch, and they'll be followed by Susan Sturgis, J.D. Din, and Kevin Flanagan.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Ellen Burr, and I'm representing the SMILE Neighborhood Association today. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Our written testimony includes many details, which I will not go into here. The Selwood-Moreland Improvement League is again requesting that you expand the design overlay to our neighborhood. We understand that we do not meet one of the criteria of the mixed-use zones project for expansion of the D overlay, as we are not a comp plan designated civic corridor or urban center, but a mixed-use neighborhood. But we do meet the other criteria, which states explicitly that a D overlay is being expanded to those areas that are expected to see the greatest amount of development and change and warrant additional design oversight. In 2014, we had 5,927 housing units. As of a couple of weeks ago, we are expecting an 18% increase with 1,119 additional units of multifamily development in the pipeline. This number does not include the increase in the 2 years between the 2014 census and now. Compare this to Division, a town center expecting 700 new units, Lloyd Center with 1,000 units. Both of these have a D overlay. You may be thinking that if you apply this D overlay to Selwood Moreland, you need to apply it to all neighborhood centers with a mixed-use neighborhood comp plan designation. We've included a chart of those neighborhoods, and they do not have our amenities, nor are they experiencing anywhere near our growth. A little history here, because one of those is Multnomah Village, which already has the D overlay. In the 1990s, both the East Portland Community Plan and the Southwest Community Plan were initiated. The Southeast Community Plan was to follow. But in 1996, ballot measure 47 resulted in property tax cuts and the early suspension of these neighborhood planning programs. The city turned its focus elsewhere, and Selwood Moreland did not get to partake in the Southeast Community Plan. Through these community plans, three Southwest neighborhoods, Multnomah Village, Hillsdale, and John's Landing, received a design overlay in their centers. We ask to receive the design overlay in parity with these Southwest neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Christy White. I'm representing the University of Portland and its 5000 North Willamette Boulevard. We've distributed some testimony and had prior testimony in a couple letters and emails in the record. I'm going to go over just three of the five issues that we have remaining under the CI zone and just want to express that University of Portland largely supports the CI zone project as it applies to its property. The first one is building length. The new CI zone imposes a 100-foot building length along our North Willamette Boulevard frontage. We have just completed our first dorm project along that frontage and did it under the design standards that were adopted under our conditional use master plan. And those design standards were endorsed and approved by the University Park Neighborhood Association. Those design standards don't carry the 100-foot limitation, but they do carry articulations and breaks in facade. We don't want to have a situation where our master plan expires in 2023, and we have additional dorm projects, and then this standard changes, and we have an inconsistent design frontage along Willamette Boulevard because, of course, it's really important on campus environments to have consistent design of those same typology buildings. The other thing is that if we applied the 100-foot break to the current dorm project, we would have lost 52 double occupancy dorm rooms, which would accommodate 104 students that would then be living in the neighborhood and under our student enrollment. Those neighborhood associations and neighbors would rather have those students on our campus. The 200-foot building setback. There's a 200-foot building setback imposed, and I think this might be unique to the University of Portland. I'm not sure. I didn't check for the other colleges. But it looks like what it's doing is just taking our current master plan provision where there's a no-build area because there's fields currently located there and putting a 200-foot building setback on. So what that did was convert a 10-year condition to a permanent condition under the CI zone and provide a big gap in our frontage over the long term, and we'd like that removed. But still apply all our design standards to the frontage. And if I could just take a few more seconds, thank you. The last one is on the CI boundaries. The CI boundaries currently don't include all of the properties that are in our conditional use master plan boundary. So McCormick and Baxter site is in our master plan boundary. It was planned and evaluated under that master plan boundary, but it's not in the CI boundary, which would mean that we later will have to do a type 3 amendment process to include properties that are already in our boundary and be able to develop them. And we think this every property that's in our CI boundary should also, or sorry, our master plan boundary should be in the CI boundary.
And in that case, the property is in the master plan and under the university's ownership, right? It's not.
It isn't yet. There's a master plan condition that says it's in our boundaries, but we're not allowed to do anything on it until we own or control it.
Okay.
Though it's been planned, it has FAR limitations, it has traffic studies associated with it, but we just can't do anything until we own it.
But you don't own it yet?
Okay. We don't own it yet. Okay. It's just in the boundaries.
Okay,
yeah, that's right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I've not done this before.
No, you're fine. Go ahead, please.
My name is Kathy Birch. I am a resident and homeowner at
in Southeast Portland in the Richmond neighborhood. I've been there for 30 years. My property is currently zoned R5, and the zoning is to change possibly to R2.5. First of all, I wish to support the testimony given last week by a Richmond resident who described and displayed pictures of several single-family homes that had been bulldozed and replaced by two houses in the $800,000 category. This will not solve the affordable housing problem, to say nothing of tearing at the visual fabric of the neighborhood and the cachet of PDX. I actually think that ADUs are more consistent with the design, because then one set of aesthetics would go with both buildings. Having supported her testimony, I would like to add some other ideas. I know there is a lot of pro and con regarding density. Instead of picking sides, I want to speak to how density is designed. I personally am upset over removal of mature trees to squeeze in property, new buildings from property line to property line. The building style is rationalized as a response to global warming. Within a mile or so of my home, many mature trees, which have served to clean the air, cool the hot sidewalks, take up water for free, unlike the fancy swales we're busy building, and finally visually grace the neighborhood. Woo! I guess I better scurry ahead. I would also like to refute the idea that minimum parking in new apartment structures is a bad idea. According to people that I heard last week, having a parking place for one's car necessarily incentivizes one driving it into the downtown. My son and his girlfriend are 25. They ride their bikes to work, but keep their old car for weekends to go and do all those things that Oregonians like to do outside. I would have to say that saying that one will stop people from having cars by denying them parking is kind of like suggesting that we curb teen pregnancy by forbidding the sale of condoms to people under the age of 20.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That's got to be the best metaphor we've heard this week, I think. All right.
The next three are Susan Sturgis, J.D. Din, and Kevin Flanagan. And they'll be followed by Cindy Eidler and Jeff Cole.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello.
Go ahead and start if you're ready.
My name's Kevin Flanagan. I own Inland Sea Maritime Group and Schooner Creek Boat Works, which is located at 3255 North Hayden Island Drive. Mayor Hales and City Council members, thank you for allowing me the time to address the City Council today on this important issue. My testimony will focus on the I overlay zone on Hayden Island in the comprehensive plan. This overlay is inappropriate for Hayden Island and should be removed from the industrial lands on the island. Hayden Island does not meet the criteria of the overlay, namely, we have no railroad access on the island. Currently, trains do not stop on the island, and there are no plans for such a stop on the island. Additionally, the island is limited for truck access due to the single bridge to the island. Due to these constraints, it's unfair to apply these overlays to the industrial lands on the island. This is the gateway to the city and needs to remain flexible in the zoning to accommodate future developments. Directly across the river in Vancouver, the waterfront is being developed similar to the Portland South Waterfront development. Hayden Island is an area of the city that is changing, and we need to allow for future changes on the island to accommodate the growth. Additionally, Hayden Island contains some of the best and most accessible beaches in the city. The island is currently park deficient. Public access to the Columbia River should be of paramount importance to the city. River access is very limited in Portland, and any opportunity to increase river access should be considered. My company had previously proposed a motorized boat ramp next to the train bridge on the north side of Hayden Island. I have included a conceptual plan for you to consider. This is a plan similar to the Willamette Park or Cathedral Park boat ramps along the Willamette River. However, the eye overlay limits parks to less than 2 acres, which would preclude this boat ramp from being developed. The Oregon State Marine Board had previously deemed this a regionally significant access point for the Columbia. The East Hayden Island Advisory Board, which I was a member, had designated a river access park at this location. For these reasons, I ask the council to remove the eye overlay from the industrial lands on Hayden Island to allow for future growth and development and give our residents greater access to the city's greatest asset, the Columbia River. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi. My name is J.D. Din, and I here to represent my mother, Mo Din. Her current block zone is R1, and it's proposed change to an EG1.
Where is this located?
On Southeast 82nd, between 82nd and 83rd Avenue, between Bybee and Glenwood Streets. And it's a small block, and the prospect of an industrial interest in going there is kind of slim. But the change has already been made. So we're concerned. The number one concern is the property tax. Would that change it for her under the new designation? And that's the bottom line. Because I submitted her letter of concern to the testimony site's email, and so she just wants assurance from the city to protect her neighbors and herself in this situation from higher taxation, because they're in a fixed pension income. They budget their expenditures, and then they whatever's left, you know, they try to make enough to pay for their property tax, and that's the concern we have. And if the city can represent us in that way with empathy, we much appreciate it.
Have you tried approaching Multnomah County?
Not yet, because this is introduced to us now.
Yes. So what I would recommend is whoever is your county commissioner, bring it to that person's attention, because it's the county that sets the property taxes.
Yes.
So they should be able to answer that question. Am I right with that? Yeah. So we try and stay out of the whole property tax thing, but if you were to ask Multnomah County's tax assessor, maybe get your county commissioner involved, I think they could probably give you an answer.
Well, yeah. And does your mother live on the property now? Or?
Yes, she's lived on the property for 18, 20 years, along with the neighbors the same amount of time.
Okay. And there's also a senior tax deferral process, so we'll make sure you get information about that.
Okay.
You've got your contact info, I assume, in your testimony. So thank you.
Thank you
very much. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Susan Sturgis, and I've submitted some written testimony regarding the proposed FAR change in the RH zones in the Alphabet Historic District. I just wanted to make one short point out of what I wrote in the written testimony, and that is that if you have trouble deciding about the 4-to-1, the 2-to-1, there are other options available, such as a 3-to-1 FAR with a 60% lot coverage. So the earlier FARs, the 2-to-1 and the 4-to-1, have an 85% lot coverage. But with the 3-to-1 and 60% lot coverage, you could have a five-story building, but the reduced lot coverage along with the setbacks might keep it from intimidating neighboring historic properties. I think this change was just made in August, and so I didn't really have time to catch up with it and to do a lot of thorough research on my own to, you know, really deeply evaluate the situation. So this is kind of my first brush at it, but I just wanted to make the point that there might be some other options, some other flexible ways of handling the issues that would address both the neighborhood concerns and other property owners' concerns.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And the last two I have off of the previous list are Cindy Eidler and Jeff Cole. Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, I'm Jeff Cole, and this testimony today is on behalf of Wayne Rask, a fractional owner and principal broker representing adjacent properties at 110 and 160 Southeast Ankeny Street in the Prunedale area of Gateway. We have specific concerns about the rezoning of these lots from the current EX zone to a reconfigured EG1 zone. Our first priority has been to fulfill cleanup on these parcels. It is listed as number 17 on the Portland Brownfield funded project list. The ownership's ultimate vision for these properties includes a five-story industrial flex building to accommodate small space users such as startup, minority, and women-owned businesses, as well as build much-needed affordable housing as part of mixed-use development. And as you know, brownfield remediation of these properties will cost ownership hundreds of thousands of dollars. And while we appreciate the city's need to dedicate an adequate inventory to land zoned for the exclusive employment-related uses, we would still prefer the land to remain zoned EX so that the buildable development justifies the projected cleanup costs of the site. However, if the final decision is to rezone our properties to EG1, we would request the following to maintain the viability of our vision. Number one, retain the current Gateway Plan District bonus floor to area ratio and height limits. These are on maps 526-2, 526-3. Under these maps, the maximum FAR is 6 and the maximum height is 120 feet. The zone EG1 with a 45-foot height limit and a 3-to-1 FAR makes it very difficult to fulfill our vision for these properties in light of the expenses. Number two, eliminate a new street through our properties called for in the Gateway Master Plan. Again, if we're going from EX to EG1, that's a pretty marked shift in usage, and this represents a huge expense on top of the cleanup costs. Number three, allow conditional residential use within the Prunedale EG1 area. Our properties are located 500 feet from the Southeast Burnside and 102nd MAX station and in close proximity to CX properties on 102nd that allow buildings over 75 feet with a potential FAR up to 14.1. And number four, allowed FAR and height bonuses and residential use as part of planned development on project sites greater than 2 acres. This is kind of similar to the mixed-use zones project. This would be a perfect fit for potential parcel sizes in the Prunedale area.
Yeah. So what's the total size of those properties?
It's roughly just about 2 acres for all three lots.
Each about, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. And if I could just want to make one final remark that there's been a lot of planning for the Gateway District. We like to be part of a revitalized Gateway. We know there's been a lot of planning in the past, and we encourage the city to keep up the good work and focus on this important area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so let's move on to the list of folks that signed up today.
I have a total of 48.
Okay, well, get as far as we can, folks. Well, thank you. Go ahead.
First three, please come on up, are Doug Klotz, Rick Glick, and James Driscoll, and they'll be followed by John Calhoun, Brian Dapp, and Isaac Dweek.
Okay. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Doug Klotz. I'm a Richmond resident. I'm testifying again on removing the parking requirements in mixed-use zones. I was at the Planning Commission briefing Tuesday on inclusionary housing, and it seems that there is some concern out there that the inclusionary housing program, as it now sits, will work in the central city, but may have a hard time in the mixed-use zones. And that's partly because there's a full property tax exemption in the central city, which there's not going to be in mixed-use. So I'm thinking, and I think some of the Planning Commission members are thinking the same way, that the removal of the parking requirements in mixed-use zones would help that, to help, you know, allow for more affordable housing. upzoning from R5 to R25, I support the upzoning of all the areas throughout, mostly southeast, where the comp plan designation has been R25 for decades, and now the Planning Bureau has studied them and decided which areas could be upzoned to R2.5. I support that. The ground floor height bonus that the Selwood neighborhood spoke about, I support that bonus, which allows for taller ground floors and, you know, gives you an extra 5 feet on the height of the building, but also an extra 5 feet on the step back, because it wouldn't make sense to have the floor plates all jog back down at the rear to accommodate, not have the additional height there, but have it on the main part of the building. I support the major city bikeway designation on Northeast 7th from Broadway to Sumner. I support keeping the FAR at 4-1 in the Northwest Portland RH areas. I know it's difficult to work with historic designations and a high FAR, but I think we need to get the density in that area. It makes the most sense to have that density there. I do oppose further downzoning in Multnomah Village. I think that staff came up with the blocks where it was really critical, and we need to get the density there, too, to have some sort of a center in Southwest. I also support CM2 at 60th and Belmont and at Hawthorne and 50th.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Rick Glick. I live at 4830 Southwest Dosh Park Lane, and I'm here today with several of our neighbors to discuss the removal. We urge you to remove segment 3892 from the major public trail zoning map. That's Southwest Dosh Park Lane and Southwest Campbell Court. We submitted a letter from the Homeowners Association and from almost all of the residents within the neighborhood. Our point here today is that these streets are private roads, always have been. The city did not construct them, does not pay to maintain them. The homeowners pay to maintain them. In the mistaken belief that they were a city street, the Southwest Trails Organization put up signs guiding people through the neighborhood, which has resulted in a noticeable increase in vehicle and foot traffic through, as people use it as a shortcut, which was not our intent. We approached city staff with this issue. Staff confirmed that there is no public right-of-way and arranged for the signs to be removed. I want to express appreciation for the courtesy and responsiveness of city staff in helping us to work through this problem. I want to leave you with the thought that this is not just a line on the map. This designation has consequences. And if you look at the September 16 notice, it says that this line on the map could affect future uses, it could affect the value of the property, and it could be a marking of a future easement acquisition by the city. Our homeowners are not interested in an easement and would oppose imposition of one. Thank you so much for the opportunity to comment today.
Thank you. Thanks very much. We got your written testimony as well. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Jim Driscoll, and I'm sort of the institutional memory for the Dosh Estates Homeowners Association. By way of background, I have my wife and I live in a house at 4825 Southwest Dosh Park Lane. We also own the adjacent unbuilt, undeveloped lot in Dosh Estates. I was the original owner in 1978, one of the developers. And in 1978, we worked extensively with the city planning staff to design a planned unit development, one key feature of which was that the roads in there would be private roads. We did that because, at least at that time, as a private road, it only had to be 28 feet wide. A city street had to be 44. There was no way to snake a road down through that property without taking out many, if not all, of the large specimen trees that were on the property. Those trees had historic significance because Henry Dosh was one of the pioneer horticulturalists in Oregon, and that was his residence. And many of the trees had been planted either by Dosh or by the original homesteader, Albert Kelly. We wanted to keep those trees, and we couldn't do it with a city street. So the project was developed with everybody understanding and knowing that those roads were private roads. There was no public right-of-way acquired by the city or asked for. None was given. And there are no sidewalks. So this has the practical consequence that if you're going to put a public trail through there, you've got to either locate it in the street or you've got to take out a bunch of people's front yards. If you put it in the street with a 28-foot wide street, there's no room for cross traffic for cars to travel in both directions on the road if you've designated 8 or 10 feet of it for pedestrian. So as a practical matter, there's no place to put a trail. As a legal matter, the city has no right to put a trail in there. And as Mr. Glick mentioned, it's really kind of frightening when you look at the public recreational trails provisions in the Planning and Zoning Code and the consequences that occur if you once designate this on the map. The city can do all kinds of things and make you do all kinds of things, including we couldn't build on our vacant lot without first creating building. They can make you build a section of trail. Yeah. Where are you going to build it? So
thank you.
I'm out of time.
As
thank
I recall, you have you even have some trees in the middle of the street and worked around them.
Precisely. And we snaked around them to save the trees. Yeah. And so
turned out well. Thank you.
Thank you.
My daughter had a friend.
Next three are John Calhoun, Brian Dapp, and Isaac Duick. And they'll be followed by Greg Moreland, Frida Christopher, and is it, there may be two people, Frida Christopher with David Douglas.
She's here.
Okay. I'll hold it right there.
Yeah, she's here. Go ahead, John. Frida, come on up.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. I'm
sorry, you're on deck, Frida. Go ahead, John.
My name is John Calhoun. I'm also a resident of Dosh Park Lane, and I'm the current Neighborhood Association president. I just want to echo what my neighbors have said and to let you know that I have 17 of the homeowners, which is more than majority, who have signed on with our request, and that the city-approved bylaws require 75% approval to change any of the regulations. So as board president, I don't have the authority to do anything other than object to what has been attempted by the city or suggested by the city. So I'm just here to support what the others said.
I appreciate getting this testimony and hearing this through. So you still have a homeowners association, right? It's a private street, therefore it is developed as a PUD. In effect, you still have a homeowners association for management of shared assets like the streets?
Correct.
Yeah.
We maintain a street. We just spent $7,000 putting on a new ceiling on the road to maintain it.
And did anybody contact you about this trail before then?
There was some discussion in the past. We objected at the time. We thought it was going away, and then we got this notice. So.
Appreciate you calling it to our attention. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Brian Dapp. I'm here today to bring to your attention serious problems with the proposed downzoning of mixed commercial property on Markham Hill, located immediately west of OHSU, as part of the 2035 Comprehensive Plan Project. Many others I know from the neighborhood are also completely against the proposal. The Homestead Neighborhood Association has already weighed in on the matter, but unfortunately, we do not feel that the interests and concerns of many neighborhood residents have been taken into consideration by the association and by planning staff. I'm now speaking of the many renters who live in the west portion of Homestead above OHSU on Markham Hill. I have included for your review a small collection of letters which illustrate their interests. I urge you to please carefully read and consider those letters. They represent many, many more people who did not have the opportunity to submit letters today. After reviewing the 2003 Markham Hill Plan, 2035 Comprehensive Plan Guide, and 2035 Comprehensive Plan Early Implementation, we find no justification for the proposed downzoning. In fact, these documents overwhelmingly support increasing development potential on Markham Hill, not restricting it. The 2035 Comp Plan Guide states that Portland can expect 260,000 new residents in the next 20 years. Where are these people going to live, and do we want to increase possibilities for people to live close to where they work? I kindly ask you to keep in mind an important and indisputable fact. OHSU employs 12,000 people on the Markham Hill campus. In light of the following circumstances, we believe that the proposed downzoning will have an overwhelmingly negative impact on our neighborhood and on our city. Portland faces an unprecedented housing shortage. I'm going to skip ahead since I'm running out of time. We feel that the proposed downzoning will only exacerbate the problems of which you are already aware, so we urge you to please either amend the proposal or reject it. I would be available to consult with you or any of your staff at any point in the future to better explain the concerns of people who live in our part of the Homestead neighborhood should the opportunity present itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the letters and the testimony. Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, City Commissioners. My name is Isaac DeWake. I am the homeowner and resident of 7008 Southwest Capitol Hill Road in Southwest Portland, zip code 97219. Just here, I have missed the window of opportunity for the comprehensive change in planning, so I'm here to submit and make my case for the change should you consider new adoption, whether prior to the implementation or in any near future. And I have made a plan to make it simple and fast since I don't have time for all this. This is my property and it is surrounded by, on the north of it, it's an R1. My property is zoned R7 currently. The one north of me is an R2, which been like that for over 4 years. The one surrounding me, whether on the east side or the north side, they have been adopted to an R1 and R2, which leaves me an R7 just by myself. If the zoning stay the way it is, it will really diminish my home value. And there will be very minimum impact should it be adopted or changed to an R1, which that's what I wish it to be, or at least R2. In that particular area, it's a really very low density and in dire need of additional more affordable homes. One particular point I really would like to make, I know the time is over, it is in a close proximity to the Jewish temple, which is, if anybody knows about the Jewish faith, one of their requirements is to be on foot. So it is a real dire need for extra additional, more affordable homes. So
thank you. Thanks very much. Did you give the Planning Bureau staff a copy of that? Or?
I am going to leave this, okay. And I will be emailing a testimony for all of you.
Great.
Thank you for making it nice and large so people at home could see it as well as us.
Thank
very
you
clever.
Very much.
Very
thank
helpful.
You.
Thank you. Thank you.
The next three are Greg Moreland, Frida Christopher, and we'll go with Jim Labby. And then they'll be followed by Kyle Kamana Floyd and Steve Strander and Justina Damasco Hernandez.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Moreland. I own a property on 14716 Southeast Powell, about Powell on 147th. I also own the property behind that. I bought this. This is being changed. This property is in a very small pocket, a long and thin pocket with about 60 houses on Powell, most of them very close to Powell. I bought this bare lot with the intention of building a 12-plex there. I can bring access from behind on Rhine, which is really, really handy. This particular property wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to build a single-family house there with the expense of bringing access from Rhine. So that is really, I just have a really narrow interest here that revolves around that.
And what's the proposed zoning at this point?
It's R2 now, and it's being proposed to move to R5. Huh. And again, it's in a very small pocket that, I don't know, 60 houses or so, or 60 lots.
Okay. All right.
And as a bare lot, you know, I bought this as an investment, and this was really the no-brainer thing to do would be to build a 12-plex there. So, and the zoning, I don't know if I can make it by the time the zoning comes around. I don't know if I can get my ducks in line.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Frida Christopher, and I'm a member of the David Douglas School Board. Superintendent Richardson sends his regrets. He was unable to make it today. But we wanted to thank the City Council.